not responsible.
I'll probably want to get that on the record. I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what?
All right.
Dan Bauer will come up and he will.
Get back together.
I changed the invited testimony and put it in your copy.
All right.
And I'll have a few copies of this over to Carla and the council.
All right.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Where is my thing? My script. So on the second readings, we only need 3 votes, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
All right. While we're waiting for others to come back, Carla, let's do the second readings. We'll wait for Commissioners Fish and Saltzman to come back. Can you start with item? Please call. Read the title and call the vote for item number 874.
That was in consent.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's another one back here somewhere.
Maybe wait for garbage.
Yeah. Can you please read the title and call the vote on 888?
888, authorize gas tax revenue bonds to finance transportation, capital projects, and to refinance outstanding gas tax revenue bonds. Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote? Second reading, item number 889.
Amend contract with CMTS, Inc. to increase compensation for temporary construction management, inspection, and project support for combined sewer overflow program. Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 889 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for item number, second reading, item number 890.
Amend contract with Stettler Supply Company to increase compensation and scope of work for Columbia South Shore wellfield improvements. Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 890 is approved. Let's see. Are we all good on that? Okay. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 885?
Revise residential solid waste and recycling collection rates and charges to address new collection services effective October 31, 2011. Saltzman?
Well, I think that Portlanders embrace recycling. As was said last week, I think it's probably our first or second most popular service the city provides through our haulers is the recycling programs. And, we've evolved over the last 30 years from, starting out with the yellow bins, moving now to the blue and green bins, one for yard waste, one for recyclables, being able to commingle all our recyclables together, no longer having to separate metal from paper and things like that, being able to recycle certain types of plastics. And it's time, I think, every few years or every 5 or 6 years, I think it's time for us as a city to push ourselves a little harder to do right by our environment and to keep up an ethic that I think we as a city are very proud of. And this time is now. This time is to move ahead with a food waste collection program, and that will not only reduce environmental negatives in terms of methane gas creation when the food sits in a landfill or elsewhere, but it will also provide a reusable product in the form of compost, and it will provide us an opportunity to once again keep pace with other cities, but also to keep pace with, I think, what we expect ourselves to accomplish. And so I'm very pleased to support this program. And I know, I just thinking about it in the last week, my own house, I realize it's going to be a challenge for me to, and for all of us, to adapt to the new small bins, to put our food waste in there, to keep my every other week collection, to keep that from overflowing. But I'm eager for the experiment, and I'm eager for the challenge. I'm really curious to see what happens once I do take out food waste, how that will preserve space in my trash can, hopefully. And I think as one gentleman testified last week, even if you can't, you might have to, you know, hold a bag of plastics for an extra week or something like that, and I'm prepared to do that. But I am prepared to adapt and to learn and to do better by our environment and to take something that's going to our waste stream and make it into a reusable product that that also helps support local jobs. So I'm very pleased to support this program. I thank Mayor Adams for his leadership, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Susan Anderson, Bruce Walker, for all their work, and the haulers for really, you know, they're the, without the haulers, this wouldn't work at all. So I want to thank our haulers for being really constructive participants at every step of the way as we ever boost our recycling rates in this city and our ethics. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Salzman, for your leadership in starting the Office of Sustainable Development, and then Mayor Adams for continuing the good work. It is important for multiple reasons that we do what the council directed in 2007, which was to work on this program, to do a pilot project, and if it worked, to go to this alternative collection system. The city could perhaps have done a better job in publicizing that this was coming down the pike for those who had not been part of the pilot project. But I heard from many people who did participate in the year-long pilot who were very satisfied, and indeed the concerns were high at the beginning of the pilot and then tapered off. I have heard from many Portlanders who are very worried about the new every other week trash pickup. My family of five has been doing monthly pickup for the last, I think, 19 years and have not had a problem with being able to keep it, my colleagues are muttering here about that's impressive. It actually, I would have to say that my spouse is not as committed to recycling as I am, so it does take me fishing things out of either the garbage or elsewhere to put in the appropriate place. My favorite was this week when I had carefully washed yogurt containers, and he still put them in the garbage after that. So, you know, and it's a learning process, and some people are more committed than others, and that's we can share. I particularly liked last week when one of the participants in the pilot project explained how, with a family of seven, was invited to share a half-full container with a family of two on the block. And this is a place where we can build community by looking to help each other out. There have been lots of concerns expressed about odor and vermin getting into the food recycling. I find it very difficult to open my green composting can with my elbow when I have an armful of yard debris, so I find it really hard to imagine how a rat would climb up and open it up. And indeed, the current system of putting trash out in plastic bags in open garbage containers, I think that this may indeed reduce problems of odor and vermin. But nevertheless, there are some significant concerns. It's a change, and change is often difficult. We are not going to be having inspectors and fines. There's a rumor going around that we were going to be looking into people's garbage and fining them if there were food scraps. That is not the case. I did hear that that is going to be the case in the Seattle pilot, so that's another reason that we can be very happy we live here in Portland. But there is assistance available, both in training for folks knowing what goes where. It is, as was mentioned, with commingling, it's much easier to know what goes where. And with pizza boxes now being able to be put in the yard debris rather than the garbage, that'll be really helpful for my family at least. But there is assistance. If you call 823-4000, which is our all-purpose city information and referral line, during business hours, my specialists in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement will be happy to direct folks to get their questions answered. And you can also go to my website on portlandonline.com/Fritz. I posted on the What Happened page the full list of options and charges in the new rate system, which will go into effect in October. There are actually a lot more choices for people to tailor their pickup needs and their rates than under the current system, as far as I can see. So for folks who are concerned about the charges, first, the council did respond to somebody who came in last week to address the issue of monthly pickup, and we... We took care of some of that, but there are also other options for getting recycling only or your debris only or on call that you could just get your trash picked up when needed rather than on a particular schedule. So this new system provides lots of options, and The staff at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will be happy to help. They have hired outreach workers and phone assistants, including people who speak other languages than English, to help answer questions. So there will be a thorough education project between now and October when it starts, and we can see how it works. It's not a huge structural change, so if it turns out that it does cause massive problems, we can take another look at it. But I do think that Portlanders will be able to adapt to this new system and that it provides an important step forward in our sustainability efforts. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for your leadership on this. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I liked a member of the public who testified last week that it took me a minute to figure out what he was saying. He said, the second rat gets the cheese, speaking of rats. And then I didn't, what are you talking about? Obviously referring to a rat trap. And we are 90 cities across the United States who have food waste composting. And again, that exotic, faraway city of Olympia, Washington has every other week with food composting. We've had the opportunity to learn from all of that earlier innovation. And I think my colleagues have been amazingly articulate. This is a change. It will be annoying at first, but we will get used to it. And we will benefit a lot for making this change. So I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman, who's the composting effort stands on his shoulders, and putting together the Office of Sustainable Development and having the policy in 07 approved through council, the great team at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, my planning and sustainability team with Lisa Libby, Rehana Ansari, and Jana, and everyone else who's worked on this. Please do get it going. Aye. So approved. All right. Now we are ready. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 871.
Nominate four projects for fiscal year 2013-14 and fiscal year 2014-15 regional flexible funds for transportation projects.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you all for being here today to discuss this important issue. We've been fighting for more resources for safe streets and roads for a very long time. 3 years of lobbying the state legislature to increase the gas tax, which resulted in House Bill 2001. Today we're talking about a regional flexible funding package, which is federal money that flows through Metro's decision-making process. Each of these funding streams that come from the federal government, some from the state, come with strings attached, and then this one is to advance freight, so advance the movement of freight, promote walking, bicycling, and access to transit. That is the specific sort of spigot of federal money for this item. Could we use this item for filling potholes and maintenance, of which we've got a maintenance backlog? No. That is why some of us fought for so long to get an increase in the gas tax, state gas tax, that is allocated to the city. That was intended and is being used a lot for the basic maintenance. The process for allocating these funds have changed this year. In previous years, we've consulted with stakeholders and forwarded our recommendations to Metro. They make the final determination. This time around, it's coming through the City Council, and I'm recommending today that we fix a major freight safety hazard in St. John's. We invest $4.5 million to build sidewalks and create safe crossings in East Portland and on Foster Road, and provide seed money that has to be matched by the private sector for a program that would provide a new transportation options for Portlanders that are safe, convenient, and transformative. Transportation priorities have changed a lot since I became Portland City Commissioner. In 2006, the year that I took over as Transportation Commissioner, the city had in its budget for sidewalk infill $50,000. That's $50,000. In the last 2 years, I directed $18 million specifically to fund sidewalk, infill, and crossing safety projects in East Portland and Southwest. These were areas of what are now the city that were subdivided and developed outside of the city and therefore under county regulations were not required, developers were not required to put in sidewalks, curbs, gutters, and the street. So we are doing everything we can to make up for that poor previous policy and to make up for lost time. We're committed to doing that. The way that we have sought to proceed and prioritize began when I took over as Transportation Commissioner with Safe, Sound, and Green. That was looking at if we had more money, where would we prioritize? How would we prioritize to spend it? And out of that came a set of specific priorities that came from the community that have continued to grow and evolve based on other changes in the system and the availability of money for specific kinds of projects. Again, this issue is incredibly confusing to the public. I understand the public wants to know why are we spending money on streetcars when we don't have sidewalks in part of the city. You can't bait and switch on a lot of this money. There is some flexibility, but on a lot of stuff, the strings can only be used, for example, on some of the streetcar funding can only be used on streetcar. We either get it and use it or it goes to another city. In our work to address the most dangerous places in the city, we have identified 10 high crash corridors, and I'll pass that out to the city council, and it's been on the websites and to the public. We can go around. 10 high crash corridors where more than 25,000 crashes have occurred on these corridors in the past 10 years. And the money has been so tight and the carnage has been so awful, we don't even have the luxury of dealing with the dangerous places in this community. We have the gruesome task of addressing the most dangerous places. And those include 82nd Avenue, Sandy, Burnside, West Burnside, 122nd Division on the east side, Powell, Foster on the east side, thousands of crashes. The three corridors with the lowest number of crashes within the highest 10 were Marine Drive, Barber, and Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway. We know that Southwest has as incomplete of street and transportation infrastructure as parts of East Portland. There's no question about that. The fact that crash numbers and injury numbers in Southwest are lower is in part because things are so dangerous, people don't even take the risk of walking or riding a bike. And so I want to be clear, the fact that the crash data is lower in Southwest is because the system is just so incomplete, people don't even try to make the effort. And when they do, we're putting them in harm's way there as we are in East Portland. It's a tough trade-off between sort of the strings attached from where the money comes from, what it can be used for, and then from year to year trying to make sure that people are treated as equitably as possible, but with a keen eye on addressing the greatest needs. The upshot, today's recommendation directs 70% of our active transportation funding to create safer access in the most disadvantaged parts of the city. I have, over the years, although you might recall the front page of the Oregonian and the dust up on the a replacement for the Selwood Bridge money, I asked for, because the project was going to be delayed a number of years, I asked that $18 million of that delay go to streets and sidewalks. And after some arm wrestling, we got that. We also got $2 million from the federal stimulus. We were one of the few cities to get federal stimulus money for sidewalks. So again, East Portland and Southwest each get $9 million recommending the poor shape of their infrastructure, the lack of complete infrastructure. But I'll be very blunt. I have, over the years, put more money into East Portland than into Southwest because that is where the greatest carnage is happening. It's been a tough decision. I've not made everybody happy over the years, but I stand by that decision, right or wrong. My goal has been to save lives and reduce injuries. The 30% of the 70, so 70% goes to safety. The 30% goes to the bike sharing project. This has been asked for by some bike advocates for the entire time that I have been transportation commissioner. Cities, you know, are more cities have done this across the world during that intervening time, much like food scrap composting. My comments there. I've waited to bring this issue before the city council because I wanted to learn the lessons without having to pay the price of every other city that's rolled this out and what has worked and what has not worked. So I think the delay in me bringing this forward has been to the benefit of the effort. 12 cities in the United States, wild successes in cities like Washington, D.C., Minneapolis, and Denver. It's the cheapest form of public transit available. Year-long memberships can be anywhere from $25 to $80. It will provide 30 to 40 long-term jobs in the city of Portland. We have to get it matched with the private sector for it to go forward, and private sector contributions to the annual subsidy. Some of the other locales that have implemented bike sharing have done so with federal money as well. I'm not going to say that the list in front of us is absolutely perfect, so I am open to amendments and look forward to hearing the testimony after a brief presentation from staff.
So, Mayor, I'd like to, is this an appropriate time to do amendments, or when would you like to do it in the sequence?
Amendments now would be great.
So thank you, Mayor Adams, and I appreciate the discussions that we've been having with the community and with my colleagues about how to move forward on this recommendation. Little history. I was the alternate the night that JPAC took up the question of what should be the appropriate split. And there was a strong push to flip the percentage so that more money would go to freight mobility than active transportation. There was a robust debate and discussion at JPAC. And I found myself in the unusual position of being, I think, my first meeting and also the deciding vote. But I was persuaded as I listened that the 75-25 split was the right split. And while I appreciate the strong advocacy of the freight mobility crowd that we could use more money, frankly, we could use more money in every category, but I think it was important to carve out the 75%. I also think it's important, Mayor Adams, in the recommendation that's coming to council, that you are proposing to spend 70% of the active transportation dollars that are to be allocated in the neighborhoods, in places where there are enormous safety concerns. And I think 70% is a good starting point. The concern that I have, however, as I looked at these applications and read them, is that I think Sullivan's Gulch, which is a core priority of both the Parks Bureau and the Transportation Bureau, and is a game changer if successful, and Barber Boulevard streetscape are equally, if not more, compelling. We have, however, with bike share, a unique opportunity, it seems to me, in that the dollars that we get through this process can be leveraged with matching dollars from other sources. That is not necessarily the case with all these other proposals. And the fact that two could become four is compelling. And, you know, that certainly, I think, is something we need to consider since scarce dollars do need to be matched. However, in a perfect world, I would bring Sullivan's Gulch and Barber Boulevard up to their full asks. There just isn't enough money to do that. So cognizant that the council has a lot of different opinions on this and trying to at least put a marker down for debate, I'm going to offer two amendments for discussion. And if at the end of the day these carry the day, fine. If they are tweaked, I'm certainly open to other suggestions. But let me get the ball rolling with two amendments. They would both be further resolves added as follows. Be it further resolved that the council directs PBOT to dedicate $750,000 for safety improvements at pedestrian crossings on Barber Boulevard between Southwest 19th Avenue and Southwest 26th Avenue, with the source of the funds being ODOT, grants, project savings, and or PBOT safety accounts. And second, be it further resolved that the Council directs PBOT to dedicate $500,000 from grants and or general transportation revenues for design and or construction of segments of the Sullivan Gulch Trail on existing public right-of-way. I would ask for a second and a chance just to explain a little more.
It's been moved and seconded.
Mayor Adams and colleagues, one of the questions that I've asked staff and discussed with you, Mayor, is what are the highest priority safety issues along Barber Boulevard? And my understanding that this amendment would target the areas that have the greatest safety concerns. And given the deaths and the harm that's been caused, I think they are the most urgent. The $500,000 for Sullivan's Gulch is below what was asked for in the application. But since I'm the co-convener on that process, I will say that one of the challenges we have is bringing in a reluctant third party into the discussion to make this sing. And it's going to take some cajoling and work. And provided I have the sense of the council that Sullivan's Gulch will continue to be a priority and would be among the first to be considered for the next round of funding in this area, which I think is likely to occur when we've actually ironed out some of the other logistical jurisdictional problems, my amendments would commit the council and PBOT to taking new dollars to fund these two priorities while preserving the proposed split, and that's my initial proposal.
Discussion? Let's go ahead and vote on it so that it's out there as both amendments, and we've submitted a copy. So the
we vote on them one at a time or both together?
Together.
Together.
Can you please call the roll?
Package.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
I appreciate the thoughtfulness that Commissioner Fish brings forward with these proposals, which, as I understand it, allows the mayor's proposal to proceed, but commits the council to future funding, which I think is an appropriate mechanism by which to get all of the projects that people have raised concerns about on the table, and if not addressed immediately, committed to being addressed within the next fiscal year. Aye.
Fritz.
I appreciate the direction of future funds to these two projects. It doesn't address the problem that we have funding from the federal government now, and we don't know where this other funding is coming from. Well, what else will not get funded because these two projects are? I do, however, support these two projects, and so I'll vote aye on the amendment.
Fish?
I want to thank the mayor and his staff for the thoughtfulness and care in coming up with a creative option at this point. And again, we're going to hear the testimony, and council is going to reserve the right to amend this as we proceed. But I also appreciate very much the mayor's commitment that if these amendments do end up surviving into the final legislation, that this will in fact be funded. Aye.
Adams.
I appreciate Commissioner Fish and his work on this. To be clear, these aren't maybe funded, these will be funded. And we will identify the sources of funding so that people can feel assured that they're being taken from cost savings if they exist other places in the Bureau, working with ODOT, so new money coming into various parts of town. And we'll return with that funding plan for the council to review. So I just want to make it really clear, and we'll have that done by the end of the calendar year. And hopefully, especially on the crossings, the most dangerous crossings actually get prioritized, the most dangerous crossings to actually get done in this construction season. So I appreciate Commissioner Fish for pushing us in the Bureau of Transportation and support. All right, let's go to presentation.
Mayor Adams, commissioners, my name is Paul Smith. I'm the planning manager of the Bureau of Transportation. And with me is Dan Bauer, who's the acting manager of the Transportation Options Division. Next slide. All right, regional flexible funds are actually federal transportation funds allocated to this region every 2 years. There are two categories of the regional flexible funds that are being discussed right now. The first is called active transportation and complete streets. At the regional level, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, JPAC, has allocated $16.875 million for that category and $5.125 million regionally for green economy and freight initiatives. These funds are not available until fiscal years 2014 and 2015. Out of those two regional allocations, there is a sub-allocation to the City of Portland. $6.6 million for active transportation, $2.36 million for freight. We started a process in January of this year after the final direction came from Metro and JPAC on how these funds would be handled this particular cycle. This happens every 2 years. So I'm sure you all know that we have three standing advisory committees in the city that come into play in this particular funding opportunity. We have a pedestrian advisory committee, a bicycle advisory committee, and the Portland Freight Committee. And since January, they have been looking at the most difficult problems that face the city in the areas that they advise us and have been recommending projects to us. And that process has been iterative. In the middle of May, we suggested five candidate projects for active transportation and three for freight. We called a public meeting, provided in advance the summary of each of those five or each of those eight projects so that people could read them, understand them, and we conducted a public meeting on June 1st. For active transportation, and on June 2nd, we had a public meeting following the regular meeting of the Portland Freight Committee at City Hall. We've also more recently received letters of support, and as of early this week, we transmitted records of all of this public input to every member of the City Council. What Metro is requiring us to do this year, the City of Portland, is to have the Council itself nominate the four projects that are in Exhibit A of the resolution, and in effect, we have had to narrow from the eight projects to four projects. So the projects that the resolution calls for allocating the funding, and again, there's $6.6 million in active transportation, that federal funding would be allocated $1.25 million to the Foster Road Safety Enhancement Project, $3.36 million federal to the East Portland Active Transportation to Transit Project, and $2 million federal to the bike share system. That covers the $6.6 million in active, the $2.36 million in federal for freight would be allocated to the Time Oil Road, Burgard Road intersection improvement. Now, just to quickly go over the four projects so you know a little bit more about them. First project would widen North Burgard Road and provide left turn lanes from each direction onto Time Oil Road. This project reduces freight delay, improves safety and access to the Rivergate Industrial District. This project supports the St. John's truck strategy, which is trying to lessen the number of trucks that are going through the residential areas of St. John's. And it is identified as a Tier 1 project in the city's freight plan. And just a couple of slides to give you the perspective. This slide shows the curve on the freight route, which is sometimes called around the horn. And in the next slide, you'll see a bit of a close-up. And on this curve is a major access to part of the Rivergate industrial area. And you'll hear a little bit of about this, a little more detail from Corky Collier, who's the chairman of the Freight Committee, who'll testify in just a minute. So the second project is bike share, and Dan will talk a little bit about that.
Thanks, Paul. The first active transportation project we're proposing today is a large-scale bike share system for the City of Portland and its visitors. Now, recognizing I think probably a lot of people in this room haven't experienced bike share firsthand, and we don't have any examples here on the West Coast where you can really get an idea of what bike share can do for a community, we thought it would be instructive to show a quick video from the city of Minneapolis who has bike share. They've had it in place for 2 years now. And it actually does a much better job of showing what bike share is about than me telling you. So with your guys' permission, can we show a short video? And Mayor, if, after a few minutes you want to stop, it's 4 minutes long, so let me know.
I will pause when people nod off.
This is Nice Ride, Minnesota. We are a public bike share system. We started last year with 65 stations just like this one and 700 bikes. We are expanding it already, so we're going to end up this year with about 116 stations. Bikes. A couple ways that you can use the system. You can be an annual subscriber, and an annual subscriber gets a key that looks like this one. With this key, you just walk up, stick it right in there. Now you can take this bicycle from this station to any other station in the system. The other way to use it is a 24-hour subscriber. A 24-hour subscriber will walk up to the pay station, put in your credit card, and then you'll have access to the system for 24 hours. You'll use these buttons to access the bike.
Nice Ride came to Minneapolis last year, and it has far exceeded everybody's expectations. You can go out at lunchtime, hop on a bike, go across the river to a deli, getting to my meetings downtown without having to park. It is a phenomenal, easy-to-use system, and the McKnight Foundation now has helped expand it to North Minneapolis, and through a collaborative funders, we're also taking it to the Central Corridor, crossing into St.
The location of the Nice Ride bikes was primarily based on where they could be successful, but we also had some businesses that really wanted them, and now that they're successful, everybody wants them. Birchwood was a leader, and they'll be a leader in everything, so they really wanted to do it right.
I was super excited to have the opportunity to have a Nice Ride kiosk at the cafe.
It makes it that much more open to the street, it makes it that much more noticeable for people that are driving by, it's more pleasant for people who are sitting outside because they don't have cars pulling up and car exhaust. I know it's home business. I'll be outside and I'll see a couple people pull up on a Nice Ride and I'm like, so where did you guys bike from? And oftentimes they're bike from downtown and a concierge at a hotel is they're from out of town and said, hey, why don't you take a nice little ride up the river? I know a great little spot to stop and have lunch.
This bicycle has an upright position. It's got I think you can. A bag, a car.
You know what bikes are. It might not in Minneapolis, but we know how to bike.
The point we're missing there by not watching all the way to the fourth minute is the mayor saying, go big or don't go at all. Bike share is extremely important to have extremely dense network of stations. And what he says later on is it's like being on a trapeze. You don't want to take off on your trapeze if you don't know there's another one there you're going to catch on to. So that's an important note from that. I'll move relatively quickly because you covered quite a few of the points, if that's okay. The proposal in front of you today calls for $2 million in, excuse me, one moment, calls for $2 million in federal funds to be matched by what we think to be $2 million in private investment. This model has worked across the globe, and we have reason to believe it's going to work here in America. Part of that reason we have reason to believe is that over 230 other cities have implemented our bike share to date, and we are in a position to implement the best practices from each of those systems. Many of the issues that plagued systems in the past, like theft and vandalism, have been addressed. The bikes are sturdy, reliable, and well-maintained. The technology has evolved to the point where the user interface is extremely intuitive. And what we've seen in other cities is dramatic and immediate increase in bike ridership. This chart shows you the first 9.5 months of ridership on the Capital Bike Share system in Washington, D.C. In winter months, September to June, the system supported over 600,000 trips, and a vast majority of those are under 30 minutes. So as we learned from the video, any trip under 30 minutes is free. So this is a major, major benefit to the cities and visitors.
In other programs, we don't know what we're going to do.
We have not decided on a pricing structure, station location, or any of that. That will come after. Bike share is called for in the bike plan for 2030. And presents a great opportunity for engaging the private sector in furthering our climate action plan goals. We expect the system to support between 300,000 and 500,000 trips in its first year of operations and significantly reduce vehicle miles traveled and carbon emissions. Since we started talking about this project in earnest 9 months ago, we received support from a lot of constituents, a very wide swath. And in your packets today, you'll see letters of support from organizations like Portland Business Alliance, New Avenues for Youth, the Bureau, or the Building Owners and Managers Association. And these are all constituents who have made the link between bike share, job creation, and economic development for their clientele. Regent Healthcare is also here today. They're the prime sponsor for the Minneapolis system. They're going to talk a little bit about their experience in Minneapolis and their involvement in the project here in Portland. You'll see letters from travel and tourism constituents, OMSI and Travel Portland. They've made the connection between bike share and the businesses they're doing. And finally, Portland State University, the largest transit destination in the region, is a major supporter of bike share and has been a champion in this project. So with that, I'll go ahead and hand it back to Paul for the rest of the projects.
Thank you, Dan.
So the third project is the Foster Road Safety Enhancements. This project would implement elements of the Foster Road Transportation and Streetscape Plan of 2003, focused on pedestrian and bicycle crossing safety improvements. Those crossing improvements would be in three general locations: the heart of Foster Business District between Southeast 63rd and 67th, the Green Link at Southeast 72nd, and the Crossroads District between Southeast 80th and Southeast 84th. I would also mention that this is one of two projects that this city council adopted as part of its federal agenda for request for annual appropriations, and I'm sure you know that there will be no earmarks. So we are seeking this because this project was endorsed by you. We're putting it forward. And just want to explain a little bit about these diagrams. Metro has put out an equity analysis for use by this jurisdiction and others contemplating where to allocate funds for these projects. So the 2010 census data is now available at what's called the block group level. And what you'll see on these is the Foster Road project. You'll see three rectangular boxes on Foster, which are the three locations I just mentioned. The top drawing shows the concentration of low-income residents and very low-income residents. The darker the color is the higher concentration. You can see that this project does serve low-income populations. And the second drawing shows concentration of Black, Asian, and Hispanic populations. This particular area toward the east shows a high concentration, or what I would call a regionally significant concentration of Asian American population. That is 2.5 times the regional average. So the point here, and what was mentioned earlier by the mayor, is 70% of the active transportation funds, this project and the next one that I'll mention, would benefit low-income and minority populations. So the fourth project, the last project, we have been working with the East Portland community for about a year on East Portland in Motion. And that it's an outgrowth and also part of the East Portland Action Plan. And there has been a tremendous amount of involvement with the community and outreach, including to the disadvantaged community. So this project is the largest outlay on a single bicycle pedestrian project that's involved street improvements that has occurred in the last 5 years. And so there are major components that I need to describe briefly. The first component would fill in all missing gaps in the sidewalk system on Division Street between Interstate 205 and the city limits with Gresham. It would also improve crossings, safety crossings for pedestrians and others crossing Division, so that, among other things, it will improve the safety of transit riders. Any transit rider who makes a round trip to and from Outer Division is going to have to cross Outer Division, either going or coming. And so these safety improvements at the crossings are very important. Project also includes what we call neighborhood greenways, which are basically bicycle and pedestrian safety improvements, first on a north-south route in the 130s and an east-west route along Pacific, Oregon, and Holiday, which feeds the Gateway Station. Those neighborhood greenways also have significant crossing improvements, including signalization at six intersections. The third component is a shared-use path on a stretch of Holgate, and the fourth is a buffered bicycle lane on Division. Now, those four components, which I'll show you in a map in just a second, constitute what we call the safety and mobility improvements of this project. This is really the core. We have to improve the facilities for safety and for mobility. But secondly, we have some supporting facilities and programs. The first, which we consider essential, and so does Metro, is our award-winning Smart Trips encouragement program. So once these facilities, both before and after, there will be marketing of all the households that are served by these projects so that they begin to know what is out there, how to use it. They can contact us, and it's Dan's group that runs that program. Why don't you hit the next slide and we'll make it a little easier to see. We would also add bicycle parking at Holgate and Division light rail stations. So the totality of the network that you see, if you can see the detail, is the improved facilities east-west feeding Gateway, Division, and Holgate. And then the north-south facility, the 130s. And again, like the Foster Road, this shows that this entire area has high concentrations of low-income and very low-income population. And the next slide also shows the high concentrations of minority populations, specifically shown in the purple is concentrations of African-American population, green, Asian, blue is Hispanic. So that's the fourth or the last of the projects. I just wanted to say a couple things in summary. And the four projects represent a total investment of $14.34 million. Out of that investment, the city would be investing $1.08 million in general transportation revenue and $2 million in urban renewal area funds from the Lentz Urban Renewal Area. And it would leverage $11 million, $9 million from the federal government and $2 million from the private sector. So this is one of the largest packages that we've come to council with. And I would just mention the two points. One is when we look at active transportation, half the money is going into the East Portland project, the last project that I mentioned. And then, again, looking at just active transportation, 70% would be would benefit low-income and minority populations. That's the East Portland and the Foster project combined. The next steps are that we would submit project narratives, which are longer descriptions, more up-to-date, reflecting council action, as well as the input that we've gotten over since June when we submitted our original summaries. Then Metro will put all the narratives together for all the shortlist projects, if you will, and call for public comment regionally between September 9th and October 10th. JPAC, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, would take action on the final allocation on December 8th of this year, and then Metro Council would ratify that action on December 15th. And again, the earliest these funds would be available is 2014. Thank you.
Mayor, I have a question about the bike share. Carrie Waters on my staff attends the Bicycle Advisory Committee meetings, and my understanding was that the Sullivan's Gulch Trail was preferred by the Bicycle Advisory Committee rather than the bike share. So how did it leapfrog over Sullivan's Gulch? Because a lot of the input seemed to have Sullivan's Gulch higher than the bike share.
Well, that's why I think that Commissioner, I'll let you answer the question on the specifics, but that's why I think that the amendments brought forward by Commissioner Fisher apropos, we all want Sullivan's Gulch to move forward, the North Portland Greenway as well. It's a matter of funding and eligibility for federal money.
Right, the Bicycle Advisory Committee actually dealt with this recommendation, the earliest of anyone. At their January meeting, our bicycle coordinator, simply gave them a list of about eight projects, some of which were not, you know, there were some candidates that went forward in May, which they didn't even act on. But they expressed support for the East Portland Active Transportation Project that you just saw, Bike Share, and Solomon's Gulch. So those were all high ranking in their recommendation or vote.
But I believe Solomon's Gulch got more votes than the bike sharing. So how did you decide, based on that recommendation and from the Project Advisory Committee, to put the federal funds to Bike Share rather than to Solomon's Gulch?
Well, I'll just simply say that we worked with three different advisory committees, as well as with the community and with other bureaus. So because these funds are not solely bicycle funds, we took all of that input, and bureau management as well as our commissioner in charge looked at all of that input. So
you can blame me.
Oh, Mayor, can sure. I just, if I can make a point on that, or after you.
So on the Bike Share, it talks about a $2 million match.
Mm-hmm.
And in discussions I've had with you and others earlier this week, you say it was a little less clear about $2 million or a match. But I guess two questions. First of all, you gave me assurance that no city dollars would be paid to operate the Bike Share program.
That's the current plan.
General fund, well, that's the current plan.
Well, I
want to get that on the record, I guess.
That's on the record.
Well, that's, yeah, but that's not, I'd prefer a yes or no. That makes a difference to me. And then, so we're talking about 40 to 50 employees in Minneapolis. There's no intent of those be public employees.
Go ahead.
So we have to, the short answer is no public funding for operating the annual operating for the system. So
no gas tax revenues, nope. No general fund,
nope.
Urban renewal.
Yeah. No urban renewal. Having said that, we also have to return to you with the actual plan. This just gives us credibility to go out to the private sector and get the private match. But nothing goes forward. We have to come back to council for the authorization of the RFP. We have to come back to council when the RFP comes back with the actual plan. So the vagueness is not around assurances that you've sought and received. The vagueness is we got to go out with this, do an RFP, and then find the private sponsors.
Well, who finds the private sponsors? Us or
we
the
do.
Proposer on the RFP?
Let's
both.
The plan we're moving with right now, which I think is a good one, it's a model that has been used around the world, is we use our seed money, $2 million in this case, to say the city of Portland wants a bike share system. We're willing to put $2 million into it. You guys, private sector, tell us how you can bring one to us. And that includes finding the private investment. And so our RFP is basically going to say, we want a bike share system. Tell us how you can bring it here. And if they can find $2 million, we'll have four. If they can find $3 million, we'll have five. So that, and when I was talking to you, that was the vagueness on the $2 million. It could be two, it could be three, it could be 1.9. So that'll come out. That'll be assessed out during the RFP process.
What if it's $500,000?
Well, that changes the project for sure.
Does that? I mean, is $2 million the minimum in private investment, or
this goes back to bike share is a scalable project. You can implement a small bike share system, but what lessons learned from the other cities is you need to go large. And what we've seen in our just general assessment of North American cities for the most part, Montreal, D.C., and Minneapolis and Denver and Boston, is we think the $4 million mark will get Portland what it wants for its initial phase.
And so $4 million, tell me how much of that goes for capital cost and how much goes for operating cost? And
That's capital. That's all capital.
It's all capital.
The annual operating is, again, an estimate provided by the vendor, but we are confident that operating costs are going to be covered by user fees and by sponsorships. And so the key component of all this is most of these systems have what they call a title sponsor or naming rights, or there's advertisements on the some of the things that aren't in the right-of-way, uniforms or whatever else for the employees. So there's ways to recoup that revenue. It doesn't put the
burden on us. Does that all have to be, do the operating costs privately funded? That's our goal, right?
Yeah.
Privately funded, no public employees,
right.
Private employees.
Right. And so the
be nailed down at the RFP evaluation stage.
Right. The 30
the proposers on the RFP need to have, you know, X million, I don't know, X hundred thousands of dollars of annual operating cost assured through either advertising revenues, sponsorships, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And the employee number is an important one. It's not public employees. What we're talking about in, for example, in D.C., they have 40 employees who basically rebalance the system. They maintain the bikes. If there's too many bikes at one station, they need to move them to another one. They spend 18 hours a day rebalancing the system. So they have a crew of 40 employees working on bike share that are private sector employees, sponsored by private sector dollars.
And is it, just if I could air it out, in some cities I saw the name on the bottom of the one of the titles of one of the individuals talking. Is that either a for-profit or nonprofit entity in cities?
There's two models. Well, there's actually several models, but the most dominant ones is somebody would form a nonprofit and run the bike share operations, or there are for-profit companies that run bike share operations. So you could go either way.
And what is the annual operating cost in Minneapolis or D.C.?
I'm going to punt to Steve on that one. Minneapolis, 1 point.
Minneapolis is a lot.
Sure, come on up. Yeah,
Steve is our index of facts.
Steve Hoyt McBeth, Portland Bureau of Transportation. I'm a bike sharing specialist with the Bureau. Again, it really depends upon the model you're looking at. If you look at Minneapolis, where they have a nonprofit running their system, then their operating costs are a lot lower. It's about $1,250 per bike per year for the entire system, which would translate to Portland to be after we would have about $300,000 to make up in sponsorship dollars. In Washington, D.C., you have a private operator with higher costs, but also higher demands in terms of performance standards that they need to meet. And those costs are about 1.5 gross, kind of translating to Portland after revenue, we think it would be around $750,000 to a million in net operating cost.
So, okay, let me just, so in D.C., the total operating costs are about $1.5 million a year?
Yes, that would be, I mean, I'm translating this to the Portland scale of what we're proposing. Sure, yes.
I just want to get a rough ballpark.
Yeah, of course.
You don't have to translate the Portland scale, just tell me what's
apples to apples, it would be, this is the gross cost would be about 1.5 in D.C. and about $750,000 in Minneapolis.
So those are the operating costs that would be borne by
the proposer. By the proposer and would be recaptured through rider subscriptions, rider revenue fees, and through sponsorship attribution, which has been a very dramatic amount of money that's been raised in the other North American cities that we're talking about.
Commissioner Fritz and then Commissioner Fish.
How long has Minneapolis system been going?
They're in their second year of operation.
And there have been other cities, that European cities and Montreal, that have had some problems with this kind of project. Is that right?
I'm not sure which part you're referring to, Commissioner.
The bike share.
With bike share in general? In Montreal, if you're referring to what the operator, the public bike system that operates the Bixies system, there have been some issues related to their financing plan within their city government, and there were because it's essentially an outgrowth of the city, but it's not a city entity, and yet the city backs the bonds on their loaning on their ability to raise money. So that was where the issue was in Montreal, was with the actual operator, because Montreal is in this very unique situation where they actually grew their own bike sharing company.
So will we be the owner and operator of this bike share project?
Well, again, this is really depends upon which model we choose. I mean, we have chosen as a bureau to put forth the opportunity for different vendors to show us different ways to make bike sharing happen, and then leave it up to the city and the city council to determine which one is the best.
Would we be liable if somebody uses one of these bikes downtown without wearing a helmet and then has an accident?
My understanding is that we would do the same protocols that we do with our other sort of city contracts with private vendors in which we ask for a general liability waiver of a certain amount that the city is written off so that, no, we are not the ones liable, then it's the actual operator.
And how will we educate the riders that, for instance, riding on downtown sidewalks is illegal?
I'll take that. it's a really incredibly fair and useful question. We need operation, we need engineering, education, and